So I'll try not to get in the way of the science, so that Angelos asked me just to give some background as to how we got to where we are. So I'll just try and briefly cover that. Thank you very much. So I know I'm rather preaching to the converted here, but I do get asked quite a lot in my job, Susan, why do you have to buy all these big computers? So I always remind everybody, why do we need the computers? And if the science you do on them that helps me make the case for why we need to buy them. So I think these days there's barely an area of science that doesn't use some kind of computational approaches. So there's a long standing track record of some expert users who use high performance computing. They've been doing it for many years, and obviously they are constantly needing more sophisticated and larger systems to allow them to do their research. But we're also seeing things like large experiments, the detectors and so on, are churning out ever more data, so you need to do something with that data. The social scientists, medics, they've got lots of data that they need to treat in a confidential way, but they want to do analysis of that data. But we're also seeing new fields starting to use computational approaches. Mm-hmm. So it's clear that we cannot duck, the government cannot duck the need to fund this computational infrastructure. If you take the traditional pyramid picture, it was clear that there was a gap between the systems that universities were providing and ARCHER, the national service. We funded some regional centres in 2012, and we learned quite a lot from that, but it was really a recognition that we needed to refresh that layer, but also have a clear strategy for it, that actually we were really clear about what we were trying to achieve with it. This is my preferred pyramid, which is actually the computers are merely a means to an end. The software that you all use is as important an infrastructure as the hardware. It lasts longer, let's face it. And of course, the people who do the research are the most important. So for me, any strategy has to include the software and the people, not just the hardware. So we had a couple of workshops with people from the community to help us thrash through what the strategy should be. And I think it's summarised in that rather long paragraph, but I think the key thing is that it needs to be diverse and flexible. So you need to recognise that there's a huge range of users that we need to support. It's not just a capacity issue either, there is a capacity issue, we want more computing. But it's also about capability, so to make sure that we're providing a range of infrastructure tools that support that diversity. Because we have to recognise that people run different kinds of jobs, different sizes of jobs, they all need supporting, it's not just one size fits all. I think the other thing that I'm always very conscious of is that we must help you future-proof what you're doing. So if there's a sudden change in technology, hardware technology, can we be sure that the codes that you all depend on will run on that? So we have to take care of that issue as well. So our investment in T2 was really, obviously, science is the key thing, that's it's the be-all and end-all. But we wanted to make sure that it was truly a national layer, so that it was open to researchers and was easy for people to get access and training. We wanted to expand the user base, we wanted to make sure that industry could get access and collaborate. Very much focused on helping the support for software engineering skills, so that people looking after the codes were supported. And we wanted people to be able to move across the tier two layer, so we could use different machines in that tier two, but also move up between their local machine via the tier two layer, perhaps to Archer or other tier one or tier zero systems. And we also wanted to have a diversity of computing architectures, so it's not just all the same. So we managed to persuade my council to give me 20 million, and we've supported these six systems. As Angelos mentioned, I think the MMM system is an interesting experiment because it is a community, a cognate research community that's focused on that, whereas the other general, all of the others are general purpose, they're open to anybody, they're not focused on a particular area of science. So we'll be very interested to hear how Thomas goes in terms of whether that's a lesson we can learn for the future and persuade other communities to get their act together the way you all did. So obviously the access, you'll hear all about the access to Thomas later on. But what we've done, as well as people being able to access, if they're in a consortium, they can access that local machine. We've also got a slice of the machines that are available nationally. And that call is now open. So if you don't just want to use Thomas, you want to try, say, the GPU machine at Oxford, there's a mechanism for you to apply to get access to that. That's all on our website. The other thing it's important to say is that, of course, if you're applying for research grants, you can place the costs of access to these systems on those grant applications, because we recognise that this is a genuine cost of doing some research. So I'm sure your research officers will be hot on making sure you do that. So that was a picture of why we did this. I'm very excited as well to hear how it all goes. I'm really looking forward to hearing about all the science that comes out of it, and that's what helps us make the case for future funding, so that we don't have to go with a begging bowl, that we actually have a strong case for future investment. So good luck, and I hope it's a great success. Thank you very much.